Welcome, guys. Today we're joined by Charlotte Willens. Charlotte is a relatively recent graduate of Hack Reactor, the development bootcamp that focuses primarily on JavaScript.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. All JavaScript.
All JavaScript, all the time. you are now a software engineer at Blend,
mm-hmm.
the lending platform. But the reason Charlotte's joining us today is because Charlotte has a very accidental engineer story. Do you mind sharing about how you found your way to a boot camp and ultimately to a software engineering job, starting maybe graduating high school?
High school. Okay. I graduated high school thinking I wanted to be a theoretical astrophysicist.
Nice.
Maybe. And then I ended up studying math. And then I took, actually, the first programming that I did applied math research the summer before senior year of college, studying the growth of shrubs. And
okay.
We used MATLAB a little bit, and I'd never done any programming. And so just, like, writing a program that, like, added up two numbers, I was like, oh, my God, this is so cool. And then senior year, I took an intro to CS class, which was awesome. And then after college, I worked at an econ consulting firm where I was mostly analyzing data using Stata, which is like a pretty basic programming language. But I really liked programming. And so then for my next job, I was programming full-time, but it was in a data analysis context. So I was analyzing Medicare data in SAS, which is not the CSS version of SAS, but is like
SAS.
Yeah.
So a lot of statistical tools to do. Basically, your job title was an analyst as opposed to an engineer?
I think I was like a data and policy analyst dash programmer.
Dash.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I worked there for like a year and a half or something. Knew that I really liked programming, but was getting a little bit bored of data analysis. So I started researching coding boot camps because a bunch of my friends had done them, or like a few of my friends, and like really liked their jobs and were super stoked about software engineering. So then I quit, and then I traveled for 8 months, and then I came back and started to teach myself JavaScript, and then applied to Hack Reactor, and then did Hack Reactor.
Got it. So you and I have an incredibly similar background. Both of us majored in undergrad college in math, took very little in the way of computer science. So by the time we were probably each 22, we hadn't really programmed much, I would
yeah.
say. And similarly, my first job out of college was not as a software engineer. And I probably had my first experiences programming using MATLAB.
Oh, yeah.
Programming.
Mm-hmm.
My first engineering job title, I think, was when I was 25, maybe. I think I was too old to miss the big wave of the bootcamp style job placement. So for our audience that might be considering doing a boot camp or may already be sold on it and are in it or are now looking for a job, what was your path to a boot camp? How did you decide that that would be the wise move career-wise?
As opposed to just like teaching myself or like doing something totally different?
Yeah, as opposed to finding an alternative route to getting your first engineering job title or not going into engineering at all?
Basically, I liked programming, and I was like, I don't actually know what software engineers do. I just know that my friends who are engineers say that they, like, are always interested in their work and, like, are always learning stuff. And so it didn't even occur to me to, like, teach myself because I didn't know what I'd be teaching myself. So I basically just Oh, and then in terms of why I decided to do boot camp instead of something else, I just felt like going for it.
Well, I guess you described just teaching yourself JavaScript, perhaps even before starting the boot camp.
Yeah, I
So,
taught myself a bit because you have to like for Hack Reactor, you have to go through like a coding interview, which is like a job interview, but way more basic because you don't really know how to code. But you still have to know like a decent amount to get through it. And so I just like did some online course or something and like read a part of a book.
So I think the by and large, the population of human beings on Earth probably doesn't have very many math majors from colleges. Something I want to emphasize for our audience is that there wasn't a whole lot of crossover in my experience of my math knowledge I learned in undergrad to engineering.
Definitely not. Yeah. Like, I had a job interview senior year of college, which is for some random consulting job. They're like, "What technologies do you use like to do math?" And I was like, "A pencil?" Like, I did not get a second phone screen. But yeah, it's like I was a pure math major, so it was all proof based. So it was literally no, like, I literally never used a computer for math besides like writing up my thesis or whatever.
For people who may be still in college or still interested in taking college type of coursework, what math would be relevant if they wanted some crossover to an engineering career of some kind?
Okay. I probably am not a good person to answer this because I don't use any math at my job right now, but I've heard that for like, I mean, I know there's obviously, I don't know, one of my friends works for a self-driving car company and was telling me he does like software engineering, but he was telling me about like some of the other jobs there that are more like computer vision and like, machine learning-ish. And apparently those use a decent amount of linear algebra and
Oh,
like
definitely.
maybe like, else, but definitely linear algebra, which I like vaguely remember learning 7 years ago.
Even in our, we went to the same college, and the linear algebra program, as I remember it, was also proof-based. So there was very little, there was no computer usage in the course. But I, from my experience and from what I know of where math gets used in programming or engineering, it's definitely linear algebra is probably the most used. Anything matrix operations wise, anything imagery or video wise, any image can be represented as a matrix where each of the pixels of an image are scalar number values. So definitely,
I want to
definitely
like
one thing.
revisit. I still have my linear algebra textbook from freshman year. So I definitely want to like relearn some of that and figure out how it applies to computer science because that sounds sick.
Yeah, are there, I guess besides graduate programs, formal graduate programs, is that something that you ultimately want to do in engineering as a career, is work on those types of problems in contrast to what you're doing now?
I think so. I really enjoy what I'm doing now and it's really interesting, but I also really like math, obviously, and if I could combine like programming and math, I think that'd be even cooler. So I think my vague plan is like in a year or something or at some point, kind of like figure out what skills I would need to pick up to do a job like that and then like remember how to do linear algebra and like maybe take like a machine learning like online course or something.
Oh, definitely. I mean, there's so many that are freely available. It's such a motivation thing.
Oh yeah, totally. I signed up for the Coursera machine learning class like a year ago and I didn't start it. So it was like, "Do you want to pay for this? Maybe it will motivate you." And I was like, "I don't need that. Like, I'm so motivated." And I just never did it.
That's a really interesting phenomenon of once you're paying for your own education, I think it becomes a lot harder to rationalize
Blowing it
paying for
off.
the education or blowing it off.
Yeah.
There are services that I'm familiar with that you deposit money with them, and if you don't follow through with
Oh, that's so
commitments,
smart.
they'll withhold the money. However, better would be to reverse the incentives, I think, so that they pay you or you pay them to accomplish your goals. So having a stick isn't as effective in this case, I don't think, as having a carrot, where
Carrot?
yeah, if you learn certain JavaScript functionality, you get paid, you know?
But then they'd quickly go out of business unless
Oh
they had
yeah.
aggressive funding.
Oh yeah. This is totally
But
unfeasible.
I agree. I'd probably be more motivated to learn machine learning if I'd get paid for it.
One of your comments you mentioned earlier, in talking with your friends about engineering as a career path that I find really interesting is that just by being in this career, your friends were saying they were enjoying it for one, but also learning on the job. One of the things that attracted me career-wise is that you're basically getting paid to learn stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. Yeah, sometimes I actually like really enjoy my job most of the time, which is like a new phenomenon for me. I'll be like, ha ha ha, this is so fun. And then I realize that I'm getting paid to like learn stuff and do cool things. Obviously, it's not all, that's not like all the time. Because that would be insane. But yeah, it's pretty sweet. It's not disappointed so far.
It's a super mutually beneficial thing for employer-employee, though, because as the employer, you're getting an output of your employee doing whatever it is they need to do with the information they're gathering.
Yeah.
But for the employee, you're getting paid to obtain more skills, which inherently makes you more valuable on the job
Yeah.
market. Which creates another weird dynamic, though, between the employer and employee, which is that you kind of price yourself out of your own job.
And then people end up moving around like every year and a half or whatever.
Yeah, this might be a phenomenon that's more exaggerated in San Francisco, but
Probably.
do you mind, if not sharing your own experience with that, do you mind sharing your experience with your peers about how often people job hop these days?
Yeah. I mean, I've only been at my job for 6 months, so
Yeah.
whatever. But I feel like it's pretty common for people I know to, I mean, I guess if they don't really like their job, leave after a year, and that's like totally acceptable. Whereas in other industries, it's like, ooh, that's pretty bad. Like, you better stay at your next job for 3 years. And I'd say if someone's been at a company for more than like 2 years, people start to think like, you're not living up to your potential. Like, you could be doing something cooler, maybe, you know?
This is such a uniquely San Francisco thing in a lot of
Yeah.
ways. But it's also pretty uniquely engineering too. Like peers of ours that I know who are not in engineering tend to have longer job tenures.
Totally, yeah.
And not due to engineers getting fired or anything, but due to
Just like the
pricing
culture of
and
the
culture.
industry.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of like it. I mean, I have some friends who, you know, were, okay, I can think of one friend, but maybe more, like engineering jobs for a year and a half or something. And then we're like, I don't really feel like having a job right now. I want to like teach myself some random stuff and just like do something cool. And then did that and are like, you know, can get another job basically whenever they want if they're good enough, you know. Whereas I feel like in consulting or more traditional industries, if you quit without having a job lined up, people think you're like a loose cannon, you know, and are like very skeptical.
So I think we have very similar backgrounds in addition to what we were talking about earlier, in that we both took jobs that we ultimately were very unsatisfied by after college. And I spent much more time at my first job than I should have in retrospect. And I think you feel similarly. Do you mind explaining maybe why it took you so long to decide to ultimately learn JavaScript and start an engineering career?
Yeah. So I think my first job I was only at for 8 months.
Okay.
Because I just realized that like the corporate consulting life was not really for me. Like just in all regards, I guess. Like values wise, work-life balance wise, and like skills wise, like I wasn't
Fair
really
enough.
getting that much out of it. So then I went to another job that was like public policy, but still data. I kind of feel like I was just like, oh, I like this aspect of my job, so I'll just like follow that and get another job that's more of that. And then I think like when I was switching to my second job, boot camps, they were probably like a thing, but not very well known. So it never even occurred to me to do that. Because I thought they were like a scam.
Sure.
And I didn't know anyone who had done it. So I was just like, oh, cool. I mean, yeah, it never, like, I thought, like, oh, I didn't study CS, so I can't be a software engineer. So I'll just do data stuff because I have those skills and it's kind of cool.
Do you think that people in the same situation you're in month eight of your first job out of college, are there skills that you think these people could learn or teach themselves
Oh, yeah.
before bailing or after bailing to prepare them to have a career transition so shortly after college, not having majored in computer science? Like, what did you learn much on the job, or in retrospect, are there things that you could have learned on the job that would have benefited you?
I learned enough, you mean at my first job? I learned enough, like, data skills, I guess, to get another job that I liked more. But like had I had the goal of being a software engineer in mind, like yeah, there's so much stuff you can teach yourself. I would say if you have a shitty or job that you don't really like, I don't know, just like spend a few hours after work, so one night a week or 2 nights a week or whatever, teaching yourself. I don't know, like it could be Python for data science or like JavaScript for software engineering. And I feel like I think a lot of companies like to see that you took initiative and are teaching yourself. I think it I don't know. I think it would be hard to teach yourself how to be a software engineer just like after work.
For sure.
But I don't know. I think I have actually one of my old coworkers kind of transitioned into being a data scientist from our old job, which seems like a pretty reasonable transition,
Oh,
like
for sure.
data analyst, data scientist, data engineer, software engineer, like whatever.
A path to a more
Yeah.
engineering focused job, sure. One of the things you were telling me before we started recording was about how your experience was after getting the job that you're at now out of Hack Reactor. And I don't know if this was an unexpected experience, but you were sharing how bewildering it was in some ways. So, do you mind telling about what
Wait, you
that
mean
experience
like
was like?
transitioning to having a job?
In engineering,
Oh
yeah.
yeah. Oh, yeah, I mean at Hack Reactor I learned a lot very quickly, but it was only 3 months long. So I basically came out knowing enough to like get a job and like with the skills to learn what I needed to learn, but I jumped into the job and was like, "Oh, I guess in software engineering, there's no onboarding, and I'm just expected to start doing work, and I have no idea what I'm doing." So the first few weeks, I was just like, "Oh my God, someone's gonna find out that I have no idea what I'm doing, and then I'm gonna get fired." And then I was talking to my other Hack Reactor friends, and I realized that like they were all having the exact same experience. But then after a few months, we're all doing fine, and you just kind of have to like, it's like a fire hose of information, and it's insane for the first month or two, and then you kind of get, I don't know, you learn enough that you can do your job well.
I don't know if this is necessarily best practices at your job, but inclusive of your experience and your HackReactor classmates who are now in engineering roles, what kinds of training wheels, so to speak, do employers have in place to help, if not provide a formal onboarding where they give you training about specific things, at least keep you from bringing down the business in your
Oh,
nightmare
it'd be very
scenario?
hard to bring down the business. I
Yeah.
still don't like have prod access, thank
So, what is
God.
prod? For our audience that isn't familiar.
Oh, the production environment where like the actual customers use, I guess. I
Oh,
guess
for sure.
I mean I guess it depends on the company. But yeah.
So, if a company has a website, production would be the website that customers are seeing at whatever URL the company's at.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and so we have like sandbox and then kind of like staging sandbox, kind of, and then beta and prod. And so, worst case scenario, I mess up one of our sandbox instances, which is not the end of the world. But I didn't realize that for like a month or two. So, I was terrified that if I pushed up bad code to master, by pushed up, I mean like submitted a pull request and it was merged, because obviously I can't push to master.
Yeah.
I would break prod, and then I realized that we had a whole release cycle where like I could break master, but like whatever, and then it would go through QA, and then QA would find the bugs, and I would fix them, and then if they missed the bugs, then I would break prod. But obviously, we have good tests, and that very rarely happens.
So what I'm hearing, and what you're not pointing out explicitly that I'd love to point out explicitly for people, is it sounds like there totally are training wheels of some kind,
Oh yeah. I mean,
including the tests.
I thought
Sure.
you meant like training.
Oh, no.
But oh yeah, there are definitely like many barriers to a new person breaking prod. But it depends on the company. Like I have friends who work at companies that don't have tests, which is terrifying. And I read something on Reddit that was like, did you read the thing about the guy who accidentally like wiped the prod database
No, but
on
I'm
his
sure this
first
has happened a
day?
lot. Yeah.
But apparently, like in the onboarding instructions, it was like paste in this command and then into your command line and then like change this database name to like your local one. And he didn't change it because like what? And it was the prod database and he wiped the prod database. And it's like, well, that's not really his fault. Like
Oh, yeah. No, certainly not.
So we thankfully that would never happen in my company.
Well, it sounds
Or
like
I probably would have deleted the prod database by now.
sounds like certain best practices are being followed for sure.
Yes, thank God.
Do you think that those safety precautions in place where you work at Blend are there because there's more engineers, perhaps? You were mentioning your peers that,
Oh, totally. It's probably,
yeah.
I'm sure that when there were like four engineers, that was not the case at all. I think it's, yeah. I mean, those things have been in place since I joined, but I joined like 4 or 5 years into, 4 or something years into the company's existence. But yeah, I think it's definitely more common for smaller startups to not have like their
As
whole
many
infrastructure.
tests
Yeah,
or
totally.
protections against employees goofing stuff up somehow or other.
Yeah.
Did HackReactor at all cover tests or testing? Okay.
They do test-driven development,
Okay.
which means they like write their test. You have your tests before you start coding, and then you like. So I guess you would like write out what you want your code to look like based on your tests, and then you would write the code until it passed the tests. I highly doubt anyone does that at a real job because like usually, as I'm coding, like the spec will change a little, it won't be exactly what I thought it was going to be when I started. So I would waste so much time if I wrote my test first. But yeah, you do testing. You don't have to do it in your big thesis project, which is like what you devote a month to. think we did a little bit of testing, just like to say that we had done testing. But it was mostly server testing, not like client testing.
So I think some of our audience might not know what client testing refers to.
Yes.
And I know it's a topic that you've been working on today, literally. Do you mind?
I was.
Yeah, the end-to-end tests with Selenium.
Oh, well, our client tests, I was talking about like client unit tests.
Okay, okay.
Oh, yeah, we have so many different types of tests. So much fun.
For people who don't know the difference between any kind of tests, do you mind sharing what are some of the different kinds of tests out there?
Sure. So, like, our client tests, let's say we're using React, because we sort of are using React. We're using Angular and also React in different places. But an example would be, like, render this component and, like, make sure it looks like what you want it to look like. This is, like, for a unit test. Or, like, you know, test a utility function that's being used in the component. And then backend tests, obviously, are testing your backend functionality. And then end-to-end tests, you spin up an instance of the app and, like, click through it, basically. And by click through it, I mean select elements based on their class or based on their ID or whatever, and fill them in or click on them or whatever and make sure that you get the expected result and that's, like, you're actually hitting your server, et cetera.
Yeah, no, I think for a lot of people who might be like we were in our first job out of college who are interested in programming for the first time, never touched HTML, CSS, JavaScript, tests might not be such a high priority.
Definitely.
On the curriculum.
But they're so nice when you're making a change and you can just run your tests and, like, know that you didn't break something.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even imagine coding without tests now.
So
horrible.
Are they like a stress control mechanism?
I think it's more like a less bugs and prod control mechanism. We had one, our code is like really well tested, but there's some little bits of old code that doesn't have tests. And one time I modified some of it and I was like, I did all the manual testing I could think of. And I was like, all right, pretty sure this is fine. YOLO. And then like I broke something because there was something I hadn't thought of. But if we'd had tests, they would have caught it. So I like tests.
There's a book called, I forget the name of it, but it defines what legacy code refers to, and their definition of legacy code is any code that does not have tests. And one of the industries, if you get into software engineering, where tests are super important, are life or death software, where you're making software to run on airplanes.
Oh my god, that sounds so stressful.
Or software to run on heart rate monitors.
Yeah.
And in those cases, the value of tests is self-evident. If you need to make some change to heart rate monitor software, you want to be dang sure that you don't stop anybody's heart in the meanwhile. But by and large, the type of entry level or above entry level jobs that folks out of a hack reactor are getting are not working on heart rate monitors, I imagine.
I'd hope not.
For my own edification and people's general curiosity about what types of jobs do people get placed into out of a hack reactor, do you mind sharing what you're doing specifically with Blend or what your peers are doing generally at the other jobs they've gotten?
Yeah, so I'm pretty full stack. I'm on the UI team, but I've mostly been, well, I guess I rotated a little bit when I started, so I was on some back end teams. And now I'm mostly working on, like, UI infrastructure, which has been really cool. So I haven't, yeah, I guess I do, like, probably equal amounts of front-end, back-end, and, like, random Python scripts.
Okay.
I'd say most people, probably the slight majority of people end up doing front-end stuff. I think Hack Reactor definitely prepares you for front-end, like, way better than for anything else. And I know CS degrees often don't teach people front end at all.
Definitely
so you kind of have, like, it's a lot easier to get a front end job out of Hack Reactor, I think, than to get a back end job. Cause like people who studied CS are probably way better prepared for back end jobs. I think I know like one or two people who have pure back-end jobs, but they kind of taught themselves a little bit of extra stuff after. So I'd say majority is full stack or front-end.
Do you think there's any kind of satisfaction trade-offs in working on user interfaces in the front end versus working on databases or Python scripts like you were mentioning on the back end? Sounds like
I
you're
think it
getting
kind of
some of
depends on the
both.
person.
Okay.
Like some people at my job just like love front end and they think it's so cool and they're like balling at it. I like front end. I don't know. I think I like find back end a little bit more interesting, probably just because I've worked with data a bunch before. I think it just depends on the person.
Do you think that it's getting easier to develop for the front end, or
Oh yeah.
oh yeah,
Although I have very little perspective since I started this like a
sure.
year ago. But even like when I started, our whole front end code base was in Angular 1.5 or something, which is like whatever. But we've been transitioning to React, which is just so much easier to use and like so much more intuitive and so much easier to test and just like you can just go a lot faster with it. And Before Angular there was Backbone, which was even more unwieldy, if that's a word. So I think it's just getting easier and easier because like the tools are getting better.
One of the things that I find really interesting on the front end are companies that provide snippets of code to be included in other companies' web pages to either track analytics about how people are interacting with your website or even to incorporate and pull in content. For example, these guys aren't super ethical, but the Taboola guys or Outbrain guys, these are two companies that add content beneath CNN.com articles where they have those three weird tricks to lose belly fat or whatever.
Yeah.
And that actually is not CNN's servers that are including that content on your page when you see it. But it's rather these other companies that have created these small snippets of JavaScript to pull in content dynamically.
Huh.
And I find that stuff really interesting because you can make web pages yourself that are just a very minimal HTML document that just incorporate content that's pulled in by third parties who know better than you even what content to include on your page.
That's interesting.
So I don't know if any of your peers from Hack Reactor joined companies that make tools like that, but these are pretty developer-focused tools. Google Analytics is a great example. Google offers a free service where you can embed a JavaScript script tag in your HTML, and they'll track all kinds of activity and how many visitors and that kind of thing,
That's
what
cool.
URLs you're visiting. But that stuff's changing so fast, and sounds like React is a pretty good and relatively, maybe relative to the other options, not as steep of a learning curve. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I'd say so because it's like just JavaScript basically, whereas Angular, you have to kind of learn Angular on top of JavaScript. And React obviously is a framework, but it's just kind of more JavaScripty, which makes it easier to wrap your head around, I think.
Oh, for sure. What experiences did Hack Reactor give you around creating your own websites and making them visible on the internet to be able to be shared with, I don't know, your parents?
Or no one.
Or no one.
We did a lot of like creating little tiny apps, and we deployed a fair amount of them on like Heroku, or I think some people used AWS, but it was a little more ambitious. Heroku's so easy, especially if you're making something that like one person will use a month.
Yeah. They have a free tier of pricing.
Yeah, we did a lot of like building little apps from scratch, which I think is kind of rare. Like we've had a few hackathons at work, and I'm like, oh great, like I like have built a ton of stuff from scratch, but a lot of people hadn't like actually sat down and I don't know, just made their own little Express server and like started their own React app and stuff.
One of the peculiarities about Heroku that I find interesting as a choice for using in Hack Reactor to teach how to deploy websites is that it's you can deploy to Heroku via Git, the version control tool. Was
Oh,
that?
right. Yeah, that sounds vaguely familiar.
Did you guys use Git to deploy to Heroku?
I think so.
There's
I think I remember
alternatives.
like git push like Heroku something something. We
Yeah.
also used DigitalOcean, which
Yeah.
I haven't used since then, but that was kind of a more complicated way to deploy things.
Did you guys also use GitHub
Oh
to
yeah,
host
we
code?
used GitHub for everything,
Okay.
which was good practice for like work because obviously everyone uses GitHub.
How big a share of skills is learning Git versus learning JavaScript and React as a part of the curriculum at a Hack Reactor?
They didn't really like teach us how to use Git. It was like teach yourself how to use Git before you get here because we're not going to waste time doing this. But if you don't know it, then you're screwed.
So, do you have a concise way for people who don't know what Git is to describe that for them, what Git does or what purpose it serves?
Basically just like version control for your code so you can commit a change and then you're like oops I don't want that so you can roll it back and then push it up to GitHub and then other people can pull it down and you know do stuff on it. I don't know, it's pretty great. Like I don't know how anyone functions without it. Like
What are the hardest aspects of the learning curve for getting familiar with Git? Or I guess
I don't
what
remember.
resources? I realize it might have been a while ago, but
Well, for resources, I don't know. There are a lot of just like good online documentation things. I think the hardest part is like getting a good workflow going with like we had project groups at Hack Reactor and like making sure we're all on the same page of like you do a pull request, and once something merges, make sure to pull down to master and then merge it into your branch and like don't mess anything up.
yeah.
Like don't accidentally push something to master and et cetera.
So in the brief time, the 6 months that you've been at Blend, you're telling me that when you started, it was 35 engineers
Yeah, something
or
like that,
something like
like
that.
35 or 38 or something.
And 6 months later, how many engineers are there?
I actually don't know. I've heard rumors that we have between 60 and 90 engineers, including interns. We had like 17 interns this summer. But when I started, hiring was not as like rapid, but now we get new engineers every week or 2 weeks or something, which is crazy.
Full-time or interns or
I guess now full time because the summer's ending, so all the new grads are starting. Over the summer, it was mostly interns and like maybe one full time
Got it.
for every few weeks.
What are the types of problems that you didn't expect maybe to arise? It doesn't sound like you expected so many people to be joining Blend just after you did. But what types of problems arose from having to onboard so many people into the business?
Well, I'm pretty new, so like I'm not managing anyone.
Sure.
So it doesn't really affect me in terms of like spending all of my time onboarding people or anything. But I think the main thing that I can think of is just like infrastructure. Like we're bombarding our Jenkins jobs with so many more runs because we have so many more engineers that things break a lot more often. So our infra people are figuring that out. And I'm sure like managers probably spend more time, answering questions and like doing code reviews than they used to.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, people seem to ramp up pretty quickly.
Are there a set of tools that the management uses for communicating what needs to be built or fixed and ranking their priority or who's working on them?
We use Jira.
Okay.
Which does exactly that.
Okay. You can sort and, yeah.
You can, like, give something, like, P3 to P0 priority, where P0 is, like, you broke something, fix it, it takes priority, or, like, everything else, and P3 is, like, do this at some point.
I mean, this is in pretty sharp contrast to how things probably were managed in economic consulting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. At my other jobs, it was more... Well, in consulting, it was more like everything is P0. Like, there's
priority number one.
Yeah. Like, if you have a task, do it immediately because the client wants it. And in my other job, it was like, I don't know. I think I would get like a weekly email from my manager after we had our weekly meeting or whatever with the things I was supposed to do before the next meeting and maybe deadlines next to them.
Mm-hmm.
Which worked fine.
I know what you mean about how different maybe that first job is from this job now. Are there any other contrasts you can think of to share for people who might be in the position that you were in, just having graduated and not knowing yet that they want to be engineers or software engineers, but about how much greener the grass is on the other side?
I think one main thing is that as an engineer, you can start right out of college and, like, if you're really good, just kind of rise up the ranks. And in consulting jobs, more often it's like there's a level you can get to and then you can't get any higher without getting a PhD or getting an MBA or some kind of master's. So I definitely prefer the engineering way.
For sure.
Of, like, grad school is probably a waste of time, you know?
I mean, back to earlier in our conversation, it's pretty cool getting paid to learn stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the alternative, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. Well, thank you, Charlotte. This has been freaking awesome.
Thanks for having me.
I hope we get to do it again. Cool.
Sweet. Goodbye.